Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Irvin Mayfield, whose new book and CD set is Irvin Mayfield's New Orleans Jazz Playhouse. We'll also talk with New Orleans Public Library Executive Director Charles Brown. Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Irvin Mayfield is one of New Orleans' best-known musicians. He's the founder and artistic director of the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, plays with Los Hombres Calientes, owns Irvin Mayfield's Jazz Playhouse at the Royal Sonesta, and Irvin Mayfield's iClub in the JW Marriott. He's also served as president of the board of directors of the New Orleans Public Library and the New Orleans Public Library Foundation Board. Today, we're going to be talking about his gorgeous new book, Irvin Mayfield, New Orleans Jazz Playhouse. Irvin, welcome to The Reading Life.
I'm glad to be here.
The Irvin Mayfield Empire continues to grow, doesn't it? Now, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous book. And it's a book and CD package, but it's huge. Art book, 7 CDs, and you've done the book and CD format before. But what was the special inspiration for this one?
I think my experience with the first book really got my palate wet to storytelling with words. I think of myself as a storyteller with notes and with music, and I love curating an experience of stories with audiences at performances. I love live performances, and I love the difference between a live performance and a studio performance. The studio gives you an opportunity to put together an idea that's distilled and it's planned and it's focused, whereas live music gives you an opportunity to be in the moment, capture something that will never again be captured, like a photograph. Mm-hmm. It was in this concept of live performance that I thought would make an awesome landscape for a book. I wanted a book that would be multidimensional, and I really wanted to tell the story of the last 10 years of New Orleans, of what's going on right now, partially because I've read a lot of stories that I really felt didn't capture the truth or the essence of what this town is about and what the fight is really for.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I love about this book is that it's practically a handbook of artistic inspiration. It's where to look to be inspired in your life.
Yeah, I think the first essay we talk about passion. The discussion of passion is one that I have with many people around the world at different performances. I have conversations with folks that may be staff members from time to time or musicians. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that they are not passionate about anything. And when you have a void of passion, it doesn't leave just an airy space with nothing there. Something gets filled when passion isn't available, and resentment fills that void. You find it in relationships, whether it be romantic, could be family, could be teacher to student. And it's important to figure out that reason, the reason why you're here, the reason why you're doing what you're doing, in that fight, that cause, that path. And this book is a way to dial into passion. I believe that if you don't have a passion of your own, one of the ways to develop it is to get into other folks' passions.
Right.
And if you do have a passion of your own, then it's really easy to be able to appreciate the craftsmanship people put into what they do.
I always think that people who do have passion have a responsibility to spread it around. You know what I mean?
Well, passion for me is just another analogy for love. Mm-hmm. And a passion, as I talk about in my opening essay in the book, passion is the good and the bad. It's the truly joyful experience like raising a child. You know, you raise a child through sickness, through great times, through bad times, through hard discussions, through embrace and understanding and misunderstanding. And it's the entire trajectory of all of that that makes you appreciate the experience. That's what a great relationship is about. It's about overcoming all the obstacles as well as appreciating the beautiful times that you have together. Passion, to me, is an analogy for love. And that's what I love when I encounter works of great artists. You can feel that craftsmanship where they work through the issues and had the breakthrough.
And we should say this book is dedicated to your two young sons, who must be over the moon. They must be so excited.
Well, you know what? Anyone who has kids know that kids are unimpressed.
That's so true. You got to work hard to impress kids.
They are unimpressed. And when I show them the galley to the book, I show all my family, typically when I finish a project, they probably were the least impressed out of everybody.
Oh, later. Later they'll be glad.
That's what we say.
Now, one of the wonderful things about this book is its structure. I love the way you take the days of the week and assign a quality to each day. Monday's introspection, Tuesday's instruction, Wednesday's adventure, Thursday's restoration, and on and on and on. So talk about that kind of rhythm of the artistic life.
Well, the book is called The New Orleans Jazz Playhouse, and it's really written from the perspective of live performance and things that we experience at the Jazz Playhouse. 300 Bourbon Street and Ross Nesta Hotel has been open for now 6 years. And I thought it was important to kind of look back on what happens in the life of an everyday venue. Mm-hmm. It's open every day. Even on Thanksgiving and Christmas, we have talent. And so I thought about the traditions of days in a week in New Orleans performances and New Orleans performers. For instance, you can go see the Rebirth Brass Band on a Tuesday at the Maple Leaf.
Right,
or
right.
Kermit Ruffins had his fame stay at Vaughn's on Thursdays. Bob French used to be at Donna's on Mondays. Mm-hmm. And I grew up and grew in love with live music through these days of the week approaches. But then also thought that days of the week can also symbolize other emotions. Monday can be something historic. We can look back on what has taken place. When I think about Mondays and Bob French, especially at the Jazz Playhouse and the role he played there where he ended his career, you know, it's special. Mm-hmm. And you think about red beans and all the wonderful things that happen on a Monday. In every other part of the world, it's just Monday. Every other part of the world, it's just Sunday. But in New Orleans, it's Super Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's Red Beans and Rice Monday. It's Fat Tuesday. It's Ash Wednesday. You know, we have these special moments and times throughout these days of the week. And I thought it would be a great way to curate an artistic experience for folks. I really believe in the bottom of my heart that everyone can live an art-filled life. I'm actually passionate about that. And I feel that my mission in life is to open that door for folks to be able to dial into their passions on a daily basis, no matter where you are. I've had a lot of folks say, I've never been to New Orleans. What can I, you know, if I go to New Orleans, what do I experience? I say, well, have you ever had Tabasco? They said, yeah. I say, well, you've been to New Orleans. So you got any Louis Armstrong records? They say, yeah. I said, you've been to New Orleans. You listen to Louis Prima? Yeah, well, you've been to New Orleans.
Right.
New Orleans is an idea. And New Orleans is an idea about passion and a certain type of life. And that doesn't mean as a city we don't have our challenges. But the things that we get right well. And it's all about passion. It's all about love. It's about truth. And it's about beauty. And these are the things that I hope to illuminate with my art.
Well, and it's also about hard work, making all these things happen. And that certainly shows in this book. And you call upon some very well-known folks for help, like Walter Isaacson, Ernest Gaines, Wynton Marsalis.
Well, look, I'm humbled. all those guys are titans.
Yeah.
And I would be silly to compare what I'm trying to do with the things that they've accomplished. They fuel my passion. And I think I said in my dedication of the book that they're ultimate inspirations for me. I love the storytelling that Walter Isaacson has done with his wonderful biographies.
Mm-hmm.
I love the narrative storytelling of Ernest Gaines. Clearly, he's a genius.
He is our master, really.
He is obviously on an island by himself, and he deserves to be there. And, you know, Wynton Marsalis is obviously a true voice, a master storyteller through his art. I mean, in so many different ways, his accomplishments are almost immeasurable. But we all stand in defense of building a narrative around humanity.
Right.
And I think that's what art is. Art is the distillation of all things that humans have created that are good.
Mm-hmm.
Look, no person is perfect. I've got my issues. Everybody's got their challenges. But what I love about art, it's the best of who we are. And when you get someone's record or you get one of those novels by Keynes or by Isaacson or you buy Winton's recordings, you're having a conversation with some of the most brilliant people in the world. And it's timeless, and it's always around, a constant reminder of what it is to be of this place.
And what's so wonderful is just from reading these brief essays that they contribute, it shows how much your work is in conversation with theirs and how much that has meant to them as well. Now, you also draw on some amazing and really well-loved figures who have been important to you. Leah Chase. You've got Leah Chase's recipe for shrimp gumbo.
Leah Chase is my muse. When you get the opportunity to go to the back kitchen at Dookie Chase Restaurant, it's a special moment. It's a moment of arrival mm-hmm. when you're an adult. And if you happen to not go to that back kitchen and she's there, you're going to be in trouble. And every time I go sit down at Dookie Chase Restaurant, they say, now, you know, Miss Leah needs to talk to you. When I explain to people the relationship we have and the type of advice she gives to me, it's shocking to a lot of folks because she's so direct.
Oh, very, very.
And she was very clear with me from a very young age, her expectations for what she wanted me to do. And she is a force. That restaurant is a force. Her family and what they mean to this city is a force. She was the first entrepreneur I really got to meet in my life. And if it wasn't for Leah Chase, I would have never opened up any jazz club. And if it wasn't for Leah Chase, I probably wouldn't be playing jazz. Mm-hmm. It was Leah Chase who told me to take the trumpet serious and to not just think it's a toy, and that it was a major opportunity for me to do something good for my community and for my family, and that the trumpet could be a path to passion.
Right.
That was Leah Chase, and I'm forever grateful for sharing that knowledge with me.
No wonder you take your baseball cap off whenever you go in there.
And yes, she's also admonished me many times for forgetting to take my baseball cap off when sitting in a restaurant. But I have nothing but love and respect for what she has given to her community. She is the highest form of an artist,
mm-hmm.
and the craftsmanship of her work is unmatched.
And you've got paintings by George Rodrigue reproduced in this book?
Well, George Rodrigue, man, I miss him so much. What an amazing individual he was. He's another person who was extremely generous with advice. I remember when he and I first started talking as professional artists,
uh-huh.
one to another. I asked him, I said, what's the big deal with this blue dog? I mean, you know, people say sometimes it just seems like a dog and you're painting the same thing all over again. He said, well, actually, the blue dog is the first time any image has been painted by a major artist over a period of many years. He says, that's very difficult to do anything in the field of art and say only one person has done it. So the real question for you is, what have you done like that?
Oh, wow.
I said, okay. He says, is your sound so distinguishable where if I heard it, I would recognize it and know immediately it was something you created? Mm-hmm. What value are you adding to where you're from? Have you carved out a little space? And that was just one discussion that Rodrigue and I would have. We'd also have a lot of fun together. You know, he and I both love to tell jokes. And I've gotten some of my best jokes from him. And I write a little bit about in an essay the time he and I were together at Emerald's Restaurant. And, man, he was cutting up so bad. The lead singer of Journey was in the other room, and he walked in. And he said, I'm going to have to call the mayor of New Orleans on you guys. You're having way too much fun. And George said, well, actually, the mayor of New Orleans was sitting here, and it was actually the former mayor of Sidney Bartholomew having dinner with us. George was a titan, and really, when he died so unexpectedly, a big tree really did fall in New Orleans and in Louisiana. He's another one who really believed in building a narrative through his art.
Right.
He constantly hit it home to me. Are you building a narrative? You know, are you creating from where you are? Are you creating from that place?
Mm-hmm.
He would always say where you're from is an idea.
Yeah.
You know, and are you building good ideas? And I've since then written a lot of lectures about the concept of building good ideas. But George Rodrigue taught me the art of building good ideas.
And then, of course, your great inspiration, the great Gordon Parks.
Oh, yeah. Gordon Parks, man. He was a titan and a true poet. Gordon Parks was the first real artist I embraced outside of jazz and music. And if it wasn't for Gordon Parks, I would have never have had the appreciation for George Rodrigue or the love for Ernest Gaines' work. And really, I thank Wynton Marcellus for that, because it was through my time of living in and out of his living room where he really hit home that to be a great jazz musician is to be a great artist, and that you need to figure out what art means, you know, what creativity is all about. And when I had the opportunity, I was commissioned by the New Orleans Museum of Art to do a piece based on his life works. And I didn't know anything about Gordon Parks. And they gave me all of his books and his movies and different slides of his art. And it was amazing to go into the world of Gordon Parks, a guy who taught himself how to take photography pictures, which were amazing. A guy who taught himself how to build his narrative and his novels. Amazing. He didn't study any of these things. His poetry, beautiful. He had his own music notation system, and he was a composer. He was the first African-American to write and direct a major motion picture.
Right, yeah.
He was the true definition of a Renaissance man, but above all, he was elegant and cool all at the same time, and a master. Poetry was really his skill. And what do I mean by poetry? Poetry is the highest aim for any artist, when you can be poetic. And he knew the poetic magic inside of all the art forms he touched. He was quite sensible that way. So he didn't have to study the technical forms. He understood the inherent craftsmanship of the discipline.
Went right to the heart of it all the time.
And through everything. And I've since wondered, was it because he was a photographer first that he was able to capture images through words and then again capture that emotion in music? And then I recognized, really, he was a musician first. Uh-huh. He actually was a honky-tonk piano player. Uh-huh. But I think, who knows the human soul? And what I love about experiencing these different art forms is that the soul speaks to you in different ways. You know, it was John Scott, who I write about in the book also, who said that if you listen quietly enough in New Orleans, the sidewalks will speak to you. And that people's souls are in the things we create. And I'm still having conversations with George Rodrigue and Gordon Parks today, even though those guys have both gone on to somewhere better.
And people are going to be having conversations with your music for a long time to come.
You know, I can only hope so. I mean, my biggest goal, of course, the publisher who I write about, his biggest goal would be to sell the book. My biggest goal is for people to really read the book and really to listen to the music. The music itself, recorded over 7 nights of a fundraiser at the Jazz Playhouse we do every year called the Love Sessions.
Yes.
It's really about being in that moment. Music reminds you of the emotion of time.
Mm-hmm.
Music takes you right back. I remember this concert. I remember this moment. In my class that I teach at the University of New Orleans, my students did an exercise where I asked them, what best displays comedy? And they would say words. I said, what best displays tragedy? And they all agreed it was pictures. I said, what best displays love? And 90% of class said music.
Wow.
And music and jazz for me is just another analogy for love.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm playing my trumpet, I'm just trying to spread the love that I was given being born in the city. That if I had been born anywhere else, I'm certain the trumpet wouldn't be at my mouth. It's because of Leah Chase, it's because of George Rodrigue, it's because of Wynton Marcellus and these other folks that I had the opportunity, the path I was led down to meet that created this thing that I'm able to share. You know, Leah Chase, and I quote in the book, she says, everyone you meet leaves you with something.
Yeah.
And she's very passionate about that. And she says, you can take something no matter from even the worst person.
Mm-hmm.
She says, what you do with it is entirely up to you. And that's what I'm trying to share, those experiences, because I believe that when we whittle it down to its most minute thing, we'll find that it's love. I mean, that's what we're trying to do as a group of people.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I love about this book is how it brings home how culture is a matrix of so many things. It's history, inspiration, environment, rigors of art forms itself, and great personalities. You know, you've chosen some great people to talk about in this book. We've been talking with Irvin Mayfield, whose beautiful new book is Irvin Mayfield, New Orleans Jazz Playhouse. Thank you so much, Irvin.
Thank you very much.
Charles Brown is the executive director of the New Orleans Public Library, and National Library Week is coming up April 12th through 18th, so we thought we'd check in with him about some of the special events going on at different libraries throughout the city. Charles, welcome to The Reading Life.
Well, thank you, Susan. Good to be here.
Well, you have some very special awards to tell us about.
Yes,
this
we do. This is the second year that the New Orleans Public Library Foundation will be sponsoring the New Orleans Public Library Choice Awards. And we are presenting awards in a number of categories, fiction, nonfiction, television this year, and music. And our award recipients are local resident Michael Petrie, who wrote Fives and 25s, set in Iraq during the conflict that's going on there. The nonfiction award recipient is Michael Ross, The Great New Orleans Kidnapping Case, Race, Law, and Justice in the Reconstruction Era. We also gave a special merit award to the television show True Detective.
Yes. Nice.
Yes. And then in the music category, because, of course, music and food define New Orleans in some respects, and literature.
All right.
Jason Marsalis for the 21st Century Trad Band. And then we presented one other award in the music category, Hurrah for the Riff Raff, Small Town Heroes.
That's
and
great.
So we're excited about all of these awards. They were nominated by library staff. There was a library committee comprised largely of library employees who made the selections. The criteria included that the work had to be either based in or have some relation to New Orleans, you know, author or whatever had to be New Orleanian. And then the work had to be published during 2014. So those were the major criteria.
So that's an exciting tradition to establish, and those are such great books.
I agree.
I mean, Michael Petrie's novel, it was really a stunning debut and a great story of what post-traumatic stress disorder is really like, set in the New Orleans we're all living in today. And when I read Mike Ross's book, I wandered around for days looking at the city in a different way. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really makes it come alive.
Right.
So great.
And that book has really had a national impact. So many of my friends who are readers have talked to me about that book. And apparently one African-American reading club in the Washington, D.C. area actually invited him as their guest speaker one evening.
Mm-hmm. Mike Ross is a terrific writer.
Yes.
And speaker. And so you can see the winners of these awards read from their work.
Right. On Monday, April 13th at the Rose F. Keller Library and Community Center.
And that's probably going to be at 6, but check out the Facebook page or
the
NewOrleansPublicLibrary.org for confirmation. So what else is going on that week?
Well, there's been a lot of buzz in the community, and rightfully so, regarding the Historic New Orleans Collection's current exhibit, Purchased Lives, New Orleans and the Domestic Slave Trade, 1805 to 1865. And Aaron Greenwald, who curated that exhibit, is going to be at the Algiers Regional Library on Saturday, April 18th at 10 a.m. This is a program presented in conjunction with the Algiers Historical Society, and she'll be talking about the exhibit. So if you've seen the exhibit, you may want to come and hear what Aaron has to say and ask your questions regarding it. If you haven't seen the exhibit, this can be kind of, quote unquote, an appetizer. It's really whet your appetite for what apparently is a very painful, but
yes,
a very informative and educational exhibit.
And Aaron's a great speaker.
Yeah, yeah.
So what else is going on for the end
of
the...
Well, that same day, the 18th of April, we're having an edible cake festival, yummy, yummy, at the Alvar Library location. And that will be from noon until 3 p.m. in the afternoon. So I think some beautifully decorated and very tasty cakes will be available that day.
I've been to that Edible Book Festival at Alvar, and it is one of the most enchanting events.
Yes.
So many people don't know that April is Edible Book Month. Who knew?
Right,
who knew?
Right.
But it's got a great feel to it, and you'll just be amazed by the creativity people come up with. You know?
And the horror is, as much as I love cake, you almost don't want to eat them. You know, some of them
look too good.
Yeah, right. They really do. And then also the afternoon at the Nix Library in the Carrollton area, we're having a teen/tween comic workshop that's being presented by Harriet Birkbeck. And kids will be able to actually design small comic books as well as have an experience in the visual narrative tradition, learning more about that. And that will run from 2 until 4 in the afternoon, again, at the Nix Library.
And I think she publishes under the name Happy Burbeck,
which I love.
Happy Burbeck. So that'll be something really exciting for that age group.
Right.
Well, that's a nice full schedule.
Right. It's going to be a busy day.
It's going to be a busy library week.
Right.
So,
that's true.
We've been talking with Charles Brown, Executive Director of the New Orleans Public Library, about what's coming up for National Library Week. Congratulations to Michael Petrie and Michael Ross. And Charles, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Susan.
Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Sleeping Beauty yawned and said, how come would I get out of bed? But Madeline says, let her nap, and jumps into my lap. Cat in the Hat says, hey, I'll go. Don't take him, cries Pinocchio. Don't take that cat to your address. He always makes a mess. Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Mrs. Parker's back behind the checkout desk today. The Cheshire Cat jumps on her head and says, let's play. But Mrs. P says, goodness, are you sure you want all these? Oh, yes, we shout together. She says, shh, quiet, please.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Stuart Woods signs his new Stone Barrington novel, Hot Pursuit, Monday, April 13th at 6 at Octavia Books. Poets Megan Burns and Gina Ferrara read Tuesday, April 14th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library. The Friends of the New UNO Library hold their used book sale Tuesday, April 14th and Wednesday, April 15th on the fourth floor of the Earl K. Long Library. Michael Martin discusses and signs Russell Long, A Life in Politics, Wednesday, April 15th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Renee Steinke reads from and discusses Friendswood, Thursday, April 16th at 5:30 at the University of New Orleans in the Liberal Arts Building, Room 140. Jamie Cornegay discusses and signs his novel Soil, Thursday, April 16th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Michael Petrie, author of Fives and 25s, interviews Cornegay following the reading. Gina Ferrara hosts Poets Reading, Poets Reading, Saturday, April 18th at 2 at the Latter Library. Bring two poems by your favorite poet to read or just come listen. Novelist L. Kevin Coleman presents his book Different Springs, along with a flamenco guitar and dance presentation, Saturday, April 18th at 6 at Octavia Books. Shannon Abel signs Choosing the Simply Luxurious Life, A Modern Woman's Guide, Sunday, April 19th from 2 to 4 at Garden District Bookshop. New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci signs Memory Man, his 30th novel for adults, Tuesday, April 21st at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. And Steve Beisner, writer, musician, and computer scientist, discusses new software that's useful to writers, Tuesday, April 21st at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. This is the meeting of the Women's National Book Association of New Orleans, and all are welcome. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading. ¶¶